but I know that you come from a very serious of conflict. I hope you took a lot of time to rest in the process. You look very refreshed. There are other members who will join us later. I hope they will come before 12. But two of the members have indicated that they are on their way. We've received some two or three apologies.
Well, for this opportunity to discuss with you our annual report. I will ask my colleagues to start in the far end to introduce themselves. So, Chris, do you want to?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Chris Sturdy. I am the interim CFO of the CSR, looking after the finances.
Good morning. My name is Reynolds Zonda. I'm the interim director for support services. I'm responsible for all support services.
Good morning. Obi Maria, Group Executive Operations.
Good morning, members. My name is Kunga Gantobe. I'm the Group Executive responsible for R&D outcomes and strategic human capital development.
Good morning. Kosa Zanakin, I'm Strategic Communications Advisor to the CEO of the CSIR.
Good morning. I'm Aziza Friedrich from the CSIR Parliamentary Office here in Cape Town.
But Helen, or the others shy. No, you're not allowed to be shy. If you are from the CSIR top, it's a very rare opportunity that the executive gives to their team.
I'm Arlene Pettis, and I work for the CSIR Parliamentary Office.
Thank you. Look, I don't know if we all know you.
Professor Smith, I'm the CEO of CSIR.
Thank you. But why is Chris and Reynolds interim? Are they on contract? Are they passing? What's happening? Okay, you don't have to answer it. I'm just wondering.
If I had introduced them, I would have dropped the qualifier interim.
So what's your documentation? Proceed.
Thank you. I will... there are several slides. A good, I guess, 35 or 40 minutes of slides. And the way one will play this is to... There are two screens. It was suggested to me that maybe I might play laser man and point here and then on again point over there. But I'll mostly point that side. We shall discuss the broad background, the mandate, the role in the national system of innovation that we're identifying, and so our strategic objectives, and then discuss the performance against objectives for 06-07. And of course, many of these things are ongoing activities, not just the thing that happened in 06-07, but we shall try not to keep referring to things we've done in the past, but there's a continuity necessary. So when we speak of the quality of our S&P base, we're typically referring about ongoing activities, and then of course, as well as our people. And we'll then eventually talk about those things that any good organization must do, good governance, financial sustainability, and then some concluding remarks. But what we thought we'd do is start by, we'll always try and do this, and that's in fact the structure of our annual report as well. Talk about those things that actually define what CSIR is, the context of the organization in accordance with this mandate, and then talk about the generic methods of governance and financial achievement. And I will suggest that at any stage, my colleagues, should they want to come in, should feel free to do so and make a comment and, as appropriate. So then, let's start at the beginning. The mandate is something of a mouthful. That's it over here. We always start the presentation by making reference to it. For those members who had to listen to this for several years now, it may get rather boring to listen to it all the time, but the point is that we think it's important always to recall what it is that is the rationale for the existence of the organization. And it's that rather big mandate, which in essence says that we ought to conduct directed and multidisciplinary research and technology innovation in order to foster industrial and scientific development and the improvement of the quality of life of the people of South Africa. And it says that the manner in which we do this is either by ourselves or in partnership with others. And so, indeed, the work that we do often is in partnership with other people nationally and internationally, both in the private sector and in the public sector. We do the work on the basis of, the question that immediately arises is what are those activities that are going to foster industrial development, that are going to foster scientific development, that are going to improve the quality of life of people. They are not specified explicitly by the mandate, but clearly one makes certain judgments and we review this all the time in consultation with stakeholders. There's always an engagement, a conversation around this. What are the areas of activity that one ought to be concerned with? For example, in the present climate, as it were, it would be odd not to have an interest in matters to do with climate change, to do with the environment. There will always be matters to do with, for example, provision of housing. It used to be, given that South Africa is an economy that has always depended strongly on its resources, those areas of scientific activity that have to do with the exploitation of the natural resources, the extraction of the resources, the mining activities, the issues that may arise, the challenges that may arise in that activity, such as safety and so on, and of course the impact that one has on the environment, on water and so on, those are the kinds of things that of necessity an organization such as CSR would take an interest in. Matters to do with health and therefore with food and therefore an interest in agriculture, an interest in for example, infectious diseases of this part of the world. And as I give these examples, it becomes quite clear that there is overlap. There is overlap with some other institutions, science councils, as well as perhaps to some degree with industry. And that overlap and universities and so on is probably best represented by looking at that diagram over there. So our activities span really pretty much the whole of what we call the research and innovation value chain, from fairly basic research, although that would be primarily the domain of tertiary education institutions, research that takes place at universities. And what directed research, which is what our mandate specifically refers to, in other words, research that is aimed at solving particular problems, rather than that may be encountered in society, that may in one or the other manner stimulate the economy, as opposed, for example, to or fairly abstruse research activity to do with perhaps the very early universe. And that is the kind of work that might more appropriately belong in an investor environment. And then directed research and associated development of products, of processes, and general know-how, in order to then deploy all of that, whether it's in the form of intellectual property that is formally protected as patents and so on, or it's general know-how, or it's some product of some description, or it's a service of some kind based upon earlier work in research and technology development. So as to have the appropriate, the desired impact on society, the economy, environment, and so on. And the science councils play very much in that space, and that's where we as CSR belong. Most of our work would be in that directed research and development activity, where even there, we would partner typically with other similar organizations, such as other science councils within the country, such as other similar research organizations in other parts of the world, such as CSIR India, CSIRO, Fraunhofer in Germany, and so on. And we would also partner in some early stage work where it's appropriate with investors. Also, investors also would say, as this indicates, won't just be restricted to basic research. They'll do a lot of activity that is aimed at solving directly, responding to challenges that arise in society, in economy. And industry would tend to play much more in that space. And perhaps the major differentiator is that whatever R&D they would do, they wouldn't do basic stuff. They'd do stuff that is aimed at, for example, improving their processes, improving their product, capturing greater market share, a much more inwardly focused set of activities in keeping with precisely the nature of the space that industry tends to play in. Whereas in our case, our focus is by no means internal. You are not doing that merely for a return to the organization, but for a greater return to society. And of course, in so doing, of course, we must do that in such a manner that the organization remains sustainable and continues to grow and enjoys, is well governed and enjoys good health as an institution. So let's then proceed to talking a little bit more detail about some of the things we do. What I'm doing here is simply illustrating that all of those pillars of our activities we take to strengthen the science and technology base so that we may perform relevant knowledge-generating research, transfer technology as well as people. That's always very important, that when we talk about impact, we're not merely talking about products, intellectual property, which we then apply. We're talking about the fact that knowledge is vested in people who then go and occupy the various parts of the economy that we seek to stimulate. Building and transforming human capital so that we can collectively, through paying attention to all of those activities, contribute to national programs of development and fulfilling the mandate of the organization, while underpinning all that, while maintaining financial sustainability and good governance. So we'll talk about this, and then we'll talk about that. So let's look at some performance highlights for 06-07. Yeah, recently, I think this was last year, was it not, when early this year, when the president visited, and here he's talking to some people who are using computers, which software that has been developed at CSR to assist people with disabilities to engage in the same way that you and I engage with computers so that they can be productive. Perhaps they might be visually impaired and so on. We've spoken about this on earlier occasions at this forum here. And there's a strong performance in our S&T output. This allows some general indicators before I move on to some specific examples. Publication in peer review literature increased over the past 2 years from 160 to 220, with some 61 international patents, and the CSR group and 22 million run from royalties, and that's already a bit of a difficulty. We did fairly well in this regard this year, and I'll talk about this a little bit more again later. Although we must not necessarily, that's a very lumpy activity, we must not necessarily expect that therefore we shall improve on that and necessarily sit at 35 or 40 million next year. Qualification levels increasing, doctorates and masters went up from 2639 from 551 in 2006, so that's 16% growth. But if we look at the demographic profile, in fact, although overall it's 16%, there was in fact a 33% growth in black doctorates and masters from 166 to 221, and a 19% growth from 175 to 209 in female doctorates and masters. So in fact, that's been the greater than average growth in those two demographic classes, black and female. Improved R&D portfolio, over 50% of work now being multi-year, large-scale projects, as opposed to simply short-term projects that we do simply to earn an income. We're taking a much more strategic. Here, let me perhaps explain that I'm striking a distinction between work that we conduct using the parliamentary grant that we receive
in order to fulfill our mandate. And contract work that we conduct on behalf, that is commissioned by external parties. And that's what one is referring to here. The temptation might have been to simply take on anything that comes along in order to generate income. But what is said is that in accordance with who we are, we'll also be looking at a more strategic, longer-term, multi-year project that are compatible with the mandate, compatible with what the CSR really is about. So as to have improved alignment of our contract work with national strategies. And as a result, in fact, a lot of our contract work is work that we do for the private, for the public sector increasing. And that's to be expected, because you might find that one will find typically that in the private sector there might be not as much work that is multi-year, large-scale, long-term. Good governance maintained, positive financial results recorded for the year, as one will report a little later. So let's proceed then and talk specifically to those various categories, S&T based, R&D outcomes, people operations, and then financial sustainability. Regarding, it's absolutely essential to have a strong S&T base in the form of, when we say S&T base, I'll talk about infrastructure, I'll talk about people, but I'll talk about all elements in turn. Scientific infrastructure and processes, we're paying attention to investment in scientific infrastructure, and that investment increased by 54% in order to purchase new research equipment in new research areas and existing research areas, such as in nanoscience, in the new Center for High Performance Computing, which is in fact located not very far from here, here in Cape Town, across the road from New City, more or less. It's essential for us to do this in order to continue doing quality work in bioscience and so on. You need to have the spectrometers, you need to have the computers to do climate modeling and so on. So that investment is absolutely essential. And good quality processes, such as research advisory panels who keep you on your toes and show that you're doing good work. They've been appointed in all units and centers to assist with strategic research decisions and the quality of our science and engineering and technology activities. And there's been an improvement in parliamentary grant investment processes throughout through thematic and internal competitive funding approaches, as opposed to simply allocating the funding without asking hard questions regarding the ability to execute. We spoke about partnerships. Partnerships are essential, and then the R&D alliances, or the whole host of agreements we have with all manner of institutions. Some of these agreements are dormant, but a lot of them are very active. So there are a strong network of research alliances in place, including, for example, tertiary education institutions and other players in the national system of innovation and international organizations. There's increasing benefits that we derive from membership of, for example, the regional research alliance, including such bodies as BOTEC. BOTEC is the Botswana, if you like, technical technological development agency, as well as the Global Research Alliance, where we work with bodies like the DTI, Danish Technology Institute, Fraunhofer in Germany, and various others. And I'm not mentioning, of course, the various other relationships that we have with our sister science councils, such as the Agricultural Research Council, such as the Medical Research Council, and so on. Notably, we've got some very strong projects that we're doing together with MinTech on light metals and other projects. And good relationships with also private sector players, such as internationally Boeing, Airbus, and we're maintaining and pushing those further. Examples of R&D and implementation. I'll go quickly through these examples, such as the use of natural fibers, fiber composites, such as flax, hemp, sisal, and so on, as a substitute for synthetics, used in interiors of aircraft. This is a joint project with Airbus. And lightweight, low-cost raw materials with environmental and sustainable computer-driven prediction models on the mechanical properties of natural fiber reinforced composites. There's a wide spectrum of, as we'll see, as we go through the examples of activities that are involved in. This is a rather technical one, using lasers, what are called femtosecond lasers. Lasers are pulsed. They take pictures at a very high shutter speed, if you like. And here, the pulsing, it pulses every 10 to the minus 15 seconds, which is a very short time. And they are able to, when you do that, to then actually freeze particular stages of a chemical process and actually see individual, if you like, molecules, atoms moving and interacting in a particular way. And you are able, to, when you do that, to then understand exactly how fundamental chemical processes take place. By freezing the motions in that way. And this is a very new and very exciting area of development. It has all sorts of exciting applications in biology, medicine, in materials, in understanding materials better and how interactions take place. It's a complete aside, but of the people who won Nobel, I know it's Nobel Prize week this week, it was mentioned yesterday, it's physics today, I'm not sure who's won, but of the people who've not won Nobel Prizes in the past, as you know, in the sciences, rather few have been from the African continent. There have been about four who were South African, but I think at the time they won the Nobel Prizes, they all were living outside the country. Outside of South Africa, there's been, to my knowledge, one science. I'm not talking about peace and literature. So one Nobel laureate in science from Egypt, and who got his Nobel Prize in chemistry not so long ago. In fact, it was for work that he did in pioneering work in femtochemistry. So let's continue then some breakthroughs in biotechnology, bacterial cell surface engineering. Developed a strain of bacteria that display proteins, that allow proteins to attach on the cell surface. And the applications in practical areas, vaccine delivery system, binding to heavy metals, very different applications from vaccines to the binding of heavy metals like platinum for use in bioremediation, biomining, and acting as a biocatalyst for use in enzyme-mediated processes. But these may sound technical areas, but technical words, but these are really very applied areas of activity and used, for example, in synthesis of pharmaceutical compounds, intermediates, as they are called. A new version of a long-range day and night sensor system. These are examples given, chosen from different areas of activity. Materials, you saw the one about flex and hemp, bioscience. In this particular area is defense technologies, where optronics engineers have developed a fully digital center pack for a precision zoom camera, which can, with an operational observation range of 26 kilometers, with improved performance under twilight, night, and artificial illumination conditions, can see at night, in essence. An important one here, recovery of products from mine wastewater. We spoke about mining activities, the impact on the environment and so on. And this is a project where we've worked with AngloCoal, who are a demonstration plant, in fact, for AngloCoal that has been constructed for recovery of products from gypsum. Using CSR technology, which enables the recovery of valuable byproducts such as sulfur, limestone, and magnetite from gypsum, which arises when you in the water cleaning process of groundwater that's been polluted in the mining process. And this supports further research into conversion of acid mine drainage to drinking water. So when you treat the acid mine, the acid water, you then get gypsum, which you then recover using this process, and then eventually you end up with a water that is drinking water. Access to satellite imagery. The use of special data to support decision making in all sorts of practical areas is important. It's a growing area. It's an area in which we are very active. So the use of satellites to take pictures remotely of the Earth, and what is called Earth observation using remote sensing, and then apply that in a variety of areas of application. Here, using data which were obtained from a system of satellites, French system of satellites, called the SPOT system of satellites, SPOT image satellite system. And we have an arrangement with the French which allows us open access to this high resolution data. It's very good data, very high resolution. Well, what we mean by that is that you can get resolution up to 2.5 by 2.5 meters, which is really, a very fine resolution indeed, in natural color. And construct a full of a mosaic of the whole country. And you can update this over periodically so that you can, for example, look at seasonal changes in vegetation. So you use that for special analysis of land use, you monitor crops and yields. And so you look at how patterns evolve on the ground, including, for example, desertification, for example, the encroachment of deserts will show up as different colors here. So you can monitor this over time, not necessarily in real time, not in the sense of, most it takes some time to construct a full mosaic, but if you are looking to look at changes over several weeks, several months, then these can get updated and give you certainly seasonal changes. It's very useful to use that this kind of data. And you can see it's really quite detailed. And let's look at some projects where there's distinct social impact. If you remember that picture I showed you earlier, I'm giving examples of activities across the spectrum, starting from research activities all the way to the impact that we have with the work that we do. So technology transfer for social impact, a unit was established to manage technology-based projects to stimulate economic activity, in particular in rural areas. And again, remember the diagram I showed you, we emphasize that when we get to that terrain, because we are not a delivery entity or an R&D entity, whatever we do in the terrain, we need to make sure that we do in partnership with other people. So the partnership approach with the private sector, with government, is absolutely essential. In a variety of areas, such as development of an essential oils and medicinal plants market sector, in collaboration with the Department of Science and Technology, and hydroponics projects in Northern Cape, leather beneficiation projects in KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest and Western Cape, and so on, and the other examples one can refer to here, which allow people to engage in small enterprises, provide employment, provide an income through work that arises ultimately from earlier research activity that is conducted by the CSR. Just to give a sense of where we are involved in various parts of the country. The CSR projects with direct social impact in relation to poverty and economic activity in those areas of the country that the bigger circle here represents some 15 projects and the smaller one, one project. So the size of the circle represents the intensity of activity in the various areas. And of course, as you can see, that our activities are more intense up in the rural areas here and over there and down the Cape area here. And some areas, of course, are sparsely populated, and we would necessarily not be very active ourselves in those parts of the country. And this must be, one must bear in mind that that's is a specification of significant economic activity. So we would typically also be in areas where there is quite a noticeable economic activity in the country. There's always a question, of course, of also being involved in those areas where there isn't much economic activity, but where you're hoping to stimulate it through the project that you engage in. And just to complete that picture, this table simply gives a sense, I won't go through it in detail, but you have it in your pack, a sense of some of the nature of projects that we're involved in, that some of the projects which, that are reflected in the previous slide, with direct social impact, that are mapped on the previous slide, water and sanitation, crime prevention, enterprise creation, involvement with education and youth. A lot of this is what is called the digital doorway. We've spoken about that, robust computer that we put and allow young people, anyone really, to interact with it. And it proved a very successful form of allowing young people who may not have interaction with computers before to discover for themselves. So we've got some 82 deployed now, and that was plus that under education and youth. And let me move on to some areas of current activity. These are activities now. I'm still staying very much in the impact space, in the right hand side of that research and innovation chain. Where now I talk about patenting activity that may then lead to those patents being successfully commercialized. Quite a bit in the biosciences, bioprospecting on indigenous resources, traditional medicines, essential oils. We referred to essential oils earlier, where in fact there then has been activity in the form of enterprises involving the community, and so on, and various other activities in the biosciences, defense, safety and security, landmine protection, optical and imaging systems. We saw an example of the camera a little earlier. Sensor-related technologies, security systems, environment, water treatment and purification, forestry, air pollution, and a lot of activities in materials, textile processing. Again, we saw an example of flax and hemp, advanced biomaterials, polymer materials. We could talk a little more about that, about each one of these areas. Actually, there are nice stories behind each of them, and so on. And then the safety systems in mining. For example, activity to we've got sensors that we deploy in mines to pick up very early vibrations, seismic activity, which you may not pick up as vibrations because it's still through either hearing or sensing it, because it is still far too weak. But if the sensors are strong enough to give you an early warning, so that you might then evacuate, because it might be an indication of a potential rockfall. We've extended that to not simply detecting the seismic vibrations, but to sensors which are going to provide all sorts of information about the mining environment in general, so that you can then take informed decisions on providing information on things like level of dust, on the integrity of structures in the mine, on whether or not you can expect to find more seams of the particular material that you are looking for, so that you don't mine needlessly if it's unlikely that you're going to strike additional material in a dangerous area, and so on. So that touches upon a whole host of issues to do with efficiency in mining, to do with health and safety in the mining environment, which we all know is a topical issue at the moment. Exploitation of IP, then, I've in fact alluded to that, but specifically, the number of international patents registered, designed, and as well as designed and technology demonstrators was a total of 61 in the past year. The group earned $22 million in royalties, and we have a 5-year strategy in place to manage our IP portfolio and exploit it. And we'll keep reporting on this every on an ongoing basis. Publications are key to any scientific endeavor, to any research R&D organization. And so our publication equivalence grew by 23% in the past year, from 179 to 220. And there's strong performance in peer-reviewed research papers. This is essentially what you to be taken seriously in the research community. You must publish in peer-reviewed journals so that peers in the field can get a sense of what it is that you're doing, and this is how you earn respectability, and this is how you can assess whether the work that you do is really of good quality. And of course, it has also practical spin-offs. When people get to know what you do, they want to work with you, either to partner on research activity together, or indeed to source, to commission you to do work on their behalf, and it becomes an income stream. But that's an indication of our performance over the years to seek where we're indicating the publication equivalence here. When we say publication equivalence, we include papers and written reports, internal reports commissioned, by various people who ask them to do, ask us to do work on their behalf. And that is the publication equivalence per researcher. So it must be, that must be read against that axis, and that read must be read against that axis over there. And here we'd like to push up the publication equivalence per equivalent per researcher all the way up to well above 0.4, 0.5, maybe up to 1, really. That would be the ideal. Still very low. But we can see the systematic improvement over the years. People, we pull that out explicitly, because ultimately this game is about exactly that. It's about people. It's about people doing research. It's about people being developed in order to be able to conduct research. We rely entirely on talents and skills of a strong group of people, of research professionals. So we take very seriously our human capital development efforts, and we have a clear strategy to contribute to not just developing people for ourselves, but to national skills development in science and technology, including internships, studentships, and support for postdoctoral studies. People who may then stay at CSR or move on and work at other places, and that's good. And we recently put in place formal career ladders to map out the growth of professionals so that people can also, as it were, take ownership of their own development. You can have a sense of where you want to be and what elements of the ladder and what the things that you need to do. That's in order to develop further. For example, then you need to, if you don't have a PhD, go and get a PhD. Then you need to think about building a research profile and publication base and so on. And provide support for, in particular, for young people to be able to ascend that ladder, that career ladder over time. Just to give a sense of what things look like, here some data on masters and doctorates, comparing 0506. It's not the absolute numbers that are the issue here, but the fact that there's growth in keeping with the strategy that we've been driving over the past few years of strengthening our SMT base. And the most important component, we spoke earlier about equipment and so on, but infrastructure. Accompanying that, and the more fundamental element of that is, of course, people. 16% growth. I made reference to this at the beginning. I'm just repeating what I said earlier, but just to emphasize the point, here we see again 33% growth in black masters and doctorates and 19% growth in female masters and doctorates. Let's look a little further at the doctorates here. In 2002, it was 7.3% of our research base. And it did not really change that much. And here, so left up to the few years between 2002 and 2005, it started rising 8.4%. That's when we're beginning to ask to say seriously that we need to have a human capital development program that places an accent on higher qualifications, on masters and doctorates, and we've been increasing that proportion steadily, 206, 9.4%, 207, 10%, and we think that's good. We still want to go to be considerably beyond that figure, and we are confident we'll be showing you systematically improving figures over the next 3 years. Comments on the matters to do with operations, maintaining certification, health and safety, and environmental standards, ISO standards 14001 and others, development of a BBBW charter, and then targets were finalized. This is a major milestone, and my colleague Reynolds Zondo may want to talk about that in more detail later, and indeed take much of the credit for that. Migration to open source software, we've spoken about that, the project that we refer to as VULA. In fact, that's what the people standing here are spelling, V-U-L-A, the VULA project. Something you may be interested in yourselves, incidentally, and we can have a conversation about that. It's in keeping with the strategy that's been adopted, that government institutions must migrate to open source software in areas where it's practical to do so. And we're taking the lead in this regard. And governance and financial sustainability, what underpins all of the activities that we've been talking about? If we haven't got that right, then we have a serious problem. And I'm happy to report that the Auditor General issued this SR with an unqualified audit report and there were no audit findings. And we intend to keep it that way. Sound overall financial performance, here are some highlights. Total operating income, excluding post-retirement medical benefits, increased by 12.7% to $1.12 billion. I made reference earlier to royalty income increasing to $22 million, plus $3.5 million the previous year. I must again emphasize that we may not necessarily be able to repeat that in the coming year, but that's the nature of this game, it's lumpy. You may get some huge royalty in 1 year, and then it might not happen the next. So really, as we learn to play in this world, we need to also have long-term analysis of these things, what's happened in the past 5 years, relative to the previous 5 years, and so on. The net margin, so far net margin was $21 million, positive and quite healthy. And balance sheet remains strong, and CSR is well positioned for future investments in support of its mandate. Just and these are very important points. Just make a quick comment on the margin. We're talking here about the margin that we make on external contract work that we do, where we may legitimately seek to make a profit on that work, and we cannot. In fact, it would be irresponsible for us to conduct contract work on behalf of external parties at a loss. So we show quite a healthy margin there. And the importance of having a strong balance sheet simply cannot be emphasized strongly enough. And that is our story. Here's a picture of parliamentary grant and contract income showing the contract R&D income is fairly flat, picking up a bit, and we'll just see what happens in the future ahead. And the parliamentary grant, you may recall that for a period, certainly before 2003-2002, that it was flat, in fact, really decreasing in real terms. But there's been an overall commitment and driven strongly by the department, which we report, Department of Science and Technology, to increase expenditure on R&D in the country to levels that exceed the 1% of GDP. And this, what we're seeing, the steady increase, is in keeping with the strategy, with the stance taken at national level to invest more in R&D activities. So we can see a steady and expect to continue seeing a steady increase in our parliamentary grant. A point I made reference to earlier, this is an analysis of sources of external contract income from international up here at the top, the public sector and the private sector. The private sector has declined, but in fact the public sector has increased. And arguably this is exactly in keeping with our saying we're taking on a strategic long-term contract projects that are in keeping with fulfilling the national priorities of the country. And a lot of that will be driven by public sector entities rather than necessarily by private sector entities, which tend to look at their more immediate R&D activities that are to do with positioning themselves as individual private sector entities. And yeah, the road ahead, they will continue to invest in new areas of research, infrastructure, people, keep an eye on strong alignment between what to do and national priorities that benefit the citizens of South Africa in order to shape a better future. Through activities in science and technology, and we have a little grand story here which in essence tells the story of what it is we're trying to do, that we're wanting to make a difference between today and a better tomorrow, and by finding alternative ways to progress, and the way our contribution to that will be through research, through science and technology, and in many respects we shall probably continue just telling you the same story, because it's based year on year, and hopefully we'll be able to give you an example of new things that we've done, but there won't be any radical departure from the story that we've just told you today. And thank you very much, and thank you for your indulgence, and listening to me for this long. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I'm going to give over to members to engage on the issues that you've raised. But I think I must congratulate you for your clean audit report. It's something that we appreciate. But also to check if there is any other contribution that you should might have left out. You mentioned that the chief operations or negative operations might be Marie might want to add something. I just want to check that we cover that base before we get into just the general. Is it something or you? Okay, thank you very much. Members, this is your report. Aye. Yes, Mr.
No, actually, I agree with you. I think you've got to thank Dr. Zabisi for an excellent briefing. Not only the very good news with regard to the Auditor General's report, but also the detail that he's been given both in the presentation and in the actual hard copy of the annual report. I've got one or two questions. The first is, are you not program-based? You seem to be general activity-based. Now, when we have the Human Sciences Research Council here, they're organized around a number of programs, specific programs, I don't know, it was 10 or 12 or whatever. When I was in the Transport Committee also, I think there were 5 or 6 Transport Department programs. And especially in transport, that was very useful because one could then compare program by program, especially with regard to budgets and what has been spent program by program, and also individual items under each program. So I just wanted that question, that you don't seem to be program-based, like international work and working in agriculture and so on. That's the first question. Then the other, the section at the back of the annual report with regard to the financial statements and so on, you speak of group and the CSIR. Could you please just distinguish what the difference is between the group and the CSIR for me? And the second question is, you've listed a number of poverty alleviation programs and projects. Have you been able yet to determine the success of these projects? Is there an ongoing audit of how sustainable these projects are? And in particular, what I'm concerned about is there seems to be a minimal rollout, if any rollout at all, of successful projects. And over the last few years, we've been given lists of successful poverty alleviation projects. We've seen some of these for ourselves. We visited the hydroponics project in Bourbon West. Very successful. But my concern is that in order really to make a dent in poverty alleviation and the creation of employment, we need to massify these projects, these successful projects around the country. You've correctly informed us that you're not an implementing agency. My concern is that who implements and what is happening to the excellent ideas you have, the excellent projects you have. Do they just get stuck in a rut and in fact not rolled out as they should be? It would be very useful for our monitoring and oversight work if you could give us a list of projects province by province. You listed numerous projects and I was very impressed with your map. And it would be very useful if we could get the details from that map of what exists in KwaZulu-Natal, where and what, and in the other provinces. Then finally, are you doing any basic research into things that would really assist the poor, in particular the rural poor, in terms of cheap and sustainable energy, cheap and sustainable sanitation, cheap and sustainable water supply? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ensley. I think we'll take a response at the stage whilst we, and then we'll take other members. I think it's quite a mouthful question. Very good one, what I said.
Thank you, Honorable Member, for those excellent and deeply insightful questions. I'd like to very strongly invite my colleagues here to respond to the questions that have been raised. Just to go through them again, the are we program based? What are the programs? Group versus CSIR, perhaps you might want to take that, Chris. The poverty alleviation successes and massifying the successful ones, and maybe some comments on basic research and then poverty, cheap energy, and what. Very quickly on the program based question. We have organized our activities around scientific themes, areas which call for particular domain expertise and particular areas of application. Bioscience, natural resource and environment, because we used to have two separate activities, one for mining, one which looked at studying the environment. We feel that we ought to integrate these very closely, because the activity of extracting resources from the ground is very closely related to the impact that one has on the environment. So we now have that combined theme of sustainable development, including both studying and looking after the environment, as well as thinking about better ways of conducting our mining activities in such a manner that one bears in mind safety and sustainability as best one can. ICT, information and communication technologies, and defense, peace, safety and security. These are the broad, if you like, one might use the term program, and within that, I'm leaving out an important one, materials, science, manufacturing and materials. This is also another theme which is much more closely aligned, in fact, to the needs of industry. So these are the broad programs that we have, and within that, there's a whole host of example projects, which is what I was doing here. But to the high level, if we had to have a hierarchy, that's what I would do. I'd say these are the five odd programs, and these are the activities within those programs. And increasingly, we try to have cross activities as well. For example, the example of the mine safety activity using sensors, that's a combination of information and communication technologies, with electronics and sensor, appropriate sensor design, and an application in a mining context to enhance safety in mining, that cuts across expertise that resides in ICT, that resides in mining, and that resides in the world of defense, peace, safety, and security. Because a lot of these sensor technologies come from the world of defense, you see, and turning them to civilian use is the sort of thing that we are looking at very strongly. So those are the programs. I mean, feel free, by all means, to say more on that question as well as the others. Thanks.
Chair, just to add to Dr. Sabisi there, we do have, at the earlier stage, we have new emerging research areas that are more like programs, even, like the emerging research area for nanosciences or nanotechnologies, emerging research area for synthetic biology, and for mobile intelligence autonomous systems. So I do agree with Dr. Sabisi that for the more established areas, we have organized ourselves broadly into programs, but we call them units. But we also have these emerging research areas, and then we have some part of our parliamentary grant as thematic programs, which typically are selected to cut across units. So that, because sometimes you really need the different groups to work together on a bigger problem. And in that sense, we do have those cross-cutting programs as well. I think that I'll stop there.
If I may take a question on the CSR versus group. The CSR financial statement, so those columns headed as CSR, refer to CSR as the entity as established by the Act. That's where the majority of our financial transactions do take place. The group refers to the larger group of companies under our control or that we have a share in, either a subsidiary or an associate. Just to talk to a few of them, Techniphonix, for example, is an entity we have got 100% share in. It's a vehicle we use to license technology, primarily where a lot of the royalties that we did receive sit. Some other associates and subsidiaries we do have, for example, Breetex, a company down in Port Elizabeth that looks at the lamination of materials to make them waterproof, to prevent bacteria and so on permeating them. We also got a company, Iborn, for example, which also falls under the group, which looks at hydroxyapatite and the implant of orbital implants into people's eyes who have lost eyes. These are companies we either wholly control or have a shareholding in, and their financial results are consolidated up into the CSR results. You'll see there's not a significant change from the CSR to group. These are primarily startup companies, all companies where there's very little financial activity currently.
Let me pick up the questions relating to the poverty relief, poverty alleviation type projects in the CSR. Just to perhaps agree with the honourable member that it's indeed an area that we're concerned about in terms of achieving success. It's not an area that is particularly easy to for an organisation of our kind to be totally successful in, even at times when we've got really good solutions and technologies. And one of the things we did when we launched a new strategy, which Dr. Sisi covered as part of this presentation, was to reflect in terms of our strategy, in terms of operating in this area. We've got a unit in the CSR called Technology for Technology Transfer for Social Impact. And their strength is largely around enterprise development, and you could see in that map that there's quite a lot of activity in that respect. And really one of their approaches is to make sure that they do quite a lot of hand holding at the project level with communities. And we've basically committed in many of these projects to be involved for a longish period. But of course the CSR core mandate and core business is not to implement projects. So the issue around partnerships and capacity building becomes an important strategy to adopt, and so that's some of the things we're pursuing. We are encouraged by the Department of Science and Technology's initiative to establish a public foundation benefit to basically drive and coordinate these types of activities in the national system of innovation, because we think it will assist us greatly in terms of ensuring sustainability. So we've been working very closely with them in terms of establishing that within the context of the TIA, the Technology Innovation Agency. Within the CSR, we've also established a competence on impact assessment to basically, not just on these types of projects, on the Technology for Social Impact project, but also to monitor and evaluate all of our projects that we implement as a CSR, again, with a view to ensure that we respond to our mandate. That particular competence is been under development in the last year or so, and we're expecting that within the next financial year, it will be fully implementing its strategy in terms of monitoring and evaluating our impact on the ground. So we think, we've learned a lot over the years. We're not fully confident that, of course, we will always be successful, and I think we're keeping an open mind to keep on learning as we go about it. But I think the partnerships we have will also assist us a great deal. I wanted to pick up on your question around doing research in terms of in the areas to provide cheap and sustainable solutions in the areas of energy, water, and sanitation. We've got in our unit on built environment in the CSR, we've actually got a dedicated what we call a research group on what we call rural infrastructure and services group. And we've again, it's one of the areas where we haven't always had I suppose the best approach and at times perhaps not the depth in terms of the science that needs to be conducted in that competence. And over the years, they've been building their capacity. They've got a number of PhDs, very well accomplished researchers in that group. And they are focusing in some of these areas you've mentioned. And we're quite encouraged that they will be able to again, show the value of the CSR in the context of the rural setup. We're also working with the Deputy Minister of Science and Technology. He's launching an setting an initiative on deploying innovative solutions and technologies to again these impoverished areas, sourcing technologies from organizations like ourselves, but also others in the national system of innovation. Specifically intervening in the area of water and energy. We've had a planning sessions with them. In fact, we're planning to have a workshop, or rather the Deputy Minister is hosting a workshop in November around this, and the CSR is actively involved in that initiative. So we are, in my view, you know, addressing some of these issues, but of course we learn as we go along.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Last point. There's also on the nanoscience and the energy and processes science side where we are doing some early work but some very interesting work on solar energy and photovoltaic cells, and the cost of these applications are coming down. Right now it's difficult to compete with coal, but it's much cleaner. And also using solar energy to distill on clean water. And that's a huge field that I think is going to develop. We had interactions with the Fraunhofer Institute recently, and even there they think that's a huge field that is developing. So it's an early area, but it can have great application in our sunny country.
Thank you very much. I've seen you, comrade, but just before I give you, maybe because I don't, a question that Honorable Ainsley raised about getting the clearer picture of projects province by province. You see, you've alluded to some. We might have to come back to you on that one so that you detail as to in the KwaZulu-Natal that is what we're doing. These are the successful ones. And don't be shy to tell us about those that have failed as well. You see.
I omitted, I should have emphasized, I will definitely provide you with that information. Just to also indicate to members that we are currently working on our external newsletter called Science Scope. It's actually focused, its next issue is focused on basically these types of projects that we do for social impact. And I think members will be interested to read a lot about some of those activities as well and some of the lessons we've learned. But we'll definitely make that information available.
No thanks. And at the financial level, I think as well to just give us those distinctions as to say, as the group, these are the subsidiaries, you see, that we have, and this is how they're performing. So that we clearly have some insight about the CSR itself, and the group and what how they're performing. I don't expect you to respond now, but just basically the type of information will be, unless it's already here, that we couldn't see.
Chair, page 124 of the annual report does talk to it. What it does not do, however, is a number of the subsidiaries are held under TechnoVent, a holding company for some of the ventures. It talks to TechnoVent results, which is a consolidation of the subsidiaries under its results. I can provide the committee with a group structure of the CSR, which may be useful in organogram time.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm going to take Comrade Numalo, Mokal, and Muhammad. So, where are we? Let me just take in this order. Numalo, is that us?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got one or two questions, all with, based on the slide presented. We started slide number four. Slide number four. CSIR, presentation will depict CSIR as doing research on various fields. It's not focused. Yes, that one. And you said you are mostly on directed research on the critical party. I would like to invite your comment. I'm just imagining CSIR among all other 42 science councils, who's responsible for coordinating all these councils. Can we have a department and then mandate each and every one of the councils, including the universities, which are doing research, to have a specific project instead of each council doing as they wish? I would like to invite your comment. I'll tell you, we've been in Sweden, where each and every entity we visited said, we are doing this as part of the government strategy. We're focusing on this. We are focusing on this. Instead of each science council will be doing sky research. I'm just inviting your comment on this. The second question would be the ratio of the new researchers coming into, as one of your slides, I don't know which one, that was showing us the number of masters that came in. I'm just looking at the ones that are coming in, the new ones, young scientists coming in versus the retiring ones. Is that picture regarding the CSIR only, or does it involve the private government or the entire country, or this picture, the number of doctors and masters coming in, it's only you mentioning the ones that are in your system? That was the second question. The other question on slide 61 international patents. If you could give us just one example so that we'll be proud as a committee to say, hey, we have this as one of our patents. The third one, the other question is on slide 12, where you said something about femto capacity. We have a world-class equipment. Has this equipment so far contributed to any breakthroughs in one of the fields in here, or one of the diseases or something? Has it contributed to any breakthrough? The other slide, 16, I'll make this question very short. Bullet number one, I don't know whether you meant the thought or is it the thought, but can this project or this picture here that is taken by this equipment, can it be used to tell us whether there will be drought or any other atmosphere or environment that will be coming, or bad weather? Can it tell us whether we'll have drought, whether we'll be heavy rain? Can it tell us that? Can it contribute to that? The other one would be page 20. The last bullet point, safety systems. When you said something on this, I just imagine this number of miners that were trapped. Have you installed the system on that mine? If you could tell us what is it. I think that's all. The last one will be this open source software. If you could comment on it, whether it's the same project as the one that we saw at AIFA. Is that AIFA? Another organization up there. Is it the same? So what you have done as a CSIR on this open source software. Thank you very much. That was a welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nwana. I must repeat this. If somebody says I've got two questions, don't end after the second question, but continue to write. Well done, Mr. Numan. Shall we take a response? Mr. Mokul, you'll be next.
At the end of my presentation, there's very much detail in the annual report. The pages, we tried even to color code the annual report so that, for example, the pages in gray have all the financial information, and the pages at the end have got a list of patents, which would answer your question on the patents, international and what the patent is, when, where it was registered, all the details. There's also a list of publications that are doing this for the first time in the annual report at the end as well. So that information is contained in there. That's a response to your question on patents. I'm not necessarily answering in the order you asked. The MSCs and PhDs, those are numbers at the CSIR. It was not an analysis of what's happening nationally. The clustering of institutions and where they report and so on, in a sense, at best I might express an opinion, but it would hardly be my place to express a strong view on what the configuration of institutions ought to be and where they ought to report. However, it is certainly the case that currently we have a whole host of institutions. Some happen to be called science councils. And for example, DST, we report to DST. So does the NRF, so does the HSRC, and so does the IESA, Africa Institute for South Africa. The MRC reports elsewhere, Mintec elsewhere, and so on. And the other institutions which are involved in science and technology development and deployment, which are falling in the state-owned enterprise domain, such as NEXA and so on. Probably, I guess the point you are raising is that nationally we ought to be thinking about the manner in which the activities of all these organizations, not just the science councils, are coordinated in order best to fulfill the objectives that the country has set for itself. I'd be loath to then express a strong view on how I personally think that ought to be conducted. This may be a bit of a cop-out, but it's very difficult to have a view, for example, on whether one believes that Infracol, for the sake of argument, should an arbitrary example, is appropriately placed within the context of being a state-owned enterprise under the PE, or should it be positioned differently, and what kind of interaction do we as an organization, through, say, our communication activities, have with the entities such as CETA, such as Infracol, such as and so on. You said, I thought I had you here, there were 40, had you say there were 42? Yeah. There's about 7 or 8 formal science councils that used to receive the funding through what was called the science vote. But what has now happened is that gets directed to the departments and given to that those institutions, particular institutions, report to, like health for the MRC and so on. Now, does that make coordination necessarily any harder? There are some attempts to do something about this. For example, there's a body called COHOT, which is where all the heads of research and technology organizations come together. And although that's not really in itself a forum for collaboration, cohort, a committee of heads of research and technology organizations. And certain conversations at a high level do take place there on work that we ought to be conducting together as organizations. It's not just the science councils, the likes of NECLA and so on are also in cohort. But the state, other state-owned enterprises are not in cohort. I mean, for example, ESCOM is not in cohort and so on. The level of ownership of this thing still requires further discussion and debate, I think. Some second laser, the state of the art is a fairly new area. We are still working in that area. We are in some respects learning to, breaking new ground ourselves, so that we cannot at this stage claim to have made major advances that we can report. There are some interesting areas we are working on in studying, which may have applications in studying new advanced materials, and we may be able to report on that in future years, and then be able to actually say here are some breakthroughs that we've been able to make in that area. Regarding that picture there, of course, the people who whose role it is day to day to do weather prediction, to predict what's going to happen to weather patterns, and I'm distinguishing this from more long-term modeling of climate change and so on, is the weather services. And the weather services will have their own applications for and data for meteorological applications. What we do, however, do, and not necessarily using this particular high-resolution map, but using the principle of remote sensing, is to do work that allows us to monitor and therefore possibly avert disasters. Now, this is not real time in the sense that you don't have a picture and then the next updated picture in the next day or something like that. It takes a while to construct this. However, you may have seen on the Weather Channel now and again on SABC they will show an image with a number of red dots. And that's an application of what is called the AFIS, a work that we did, CSR did with ESCOM, Advanced Fire Information System. The Advanced Fire Information System picks up fires that start at various places. It's the same technology, if you like, same principle, in that it's a satellite imager using what is called infrared sensors, which show you where fell fires fires start, and many fell fires just start spontaneously, and then they burn themselves out. But sometimes they may be dangerous, and want to see where they are and intervene early. In ESCOM in particular, interested in case those fires are near their transmission lines, to then deploy to do something about it. Or you might do something similar with floods, with water, with rivers when they burst their banks in rains. Then you might be able to intervene more quickly and evacuate communities to avert disaster. So those are the sorts of disaster remediation applications that we have been able to be involved in through satellite imaging of this nature. The mining installation was it at that particular mine? Goodness, I frankly do not know. In any case, the issue at that mine was about, if I remember correctly, was about a shaft and the pipe falling into the shaft and making it, and then preventing the lift from therefore working and extracting people, rather than it being about a seismic event leading to a rockfall, which is what our current system is able to do. However, as I indicated, we've also been working on a system. We're really using sensors to detect all sorts of data about mine conditions, and hopefully we're going to be in a position to have these systems installed in a variety of mines. Maybe they ought to be, well, let me pause there, in a variety of mines. Whether or not there's a regulatory framework in the future that calls upon mines to do so is another conversation. The open source, there are a number of We are not the only ones in South Africa who are seeking to make the migration open source. ESA, the project at ESA, we know about it, but they're doing it as it were as a parallel project. But the principles are exactly the same. They're doing the same things. Just as CETA is beginning to do something, just as in the private sector, for example, First National Bank has made the transition, as well as I think places like Mr. Price and so on. So there's a number of people who are doing this. But what we are seeking to do is to not just do it for ourselves, but to then assist other parties in the public sector to be able to make the transition where appropriate. I may have left something out, and by all means, colleagues will want to fill in the gaps. Thank you.
If I can add to that, I think the first question, I think Dr. Sabisi answered it, but just to add to the national coordination issue, I think the new DST 10-year plan has some national programs, and it's just beginning to unfold now, but I can already tell that we are working in a more coordinated way because there's this national program, and we all participate in the national program. There are examples like very early work yet, but in the area of the hydrogen economy and working together as different groups with tertiary education, with science councils, and coordinating amongst ourselves. And actually taking the whole issue of the hydrogen economy and unpacking that into components and then encouraging certain groups to concentrate on certain components while we are coordinating. So there are some good things happening there under the leadership of the Department of Science and Technology. The other issue that you asked, the international patents on, I would like to just mention three. And when I do that, please understand that I'm not the expert. But the first one is they on page 138 and 139. But the bioreactor patent, that's one that we did across the boundary of the CSIR and the University of Pretoria, and developed a bioreactor that's actually like an artificial liver. And it actually has a scaffold, a polymer scaffold, and you can grow live cells onto that polymer scaffold. Now, what can you do with that? Obviously, you can help people with liver problems. But maybe the bigger issue in the long term is going to be, you can test drugs on this bio-artificial thing. And you can see whether it kills the cells or whether it helps. And it can be quite an interesting thing in the future. I hope I'm not saying too much today, but you wanted to know what can you be proud of. The other one is the packaging with a water-soluble barrier. That might sound trivial, but at the moment you cannot find that beer doesn't sell in plastic bottles because the plastic is actually permeable and oxygen moves through. You don't think about it, but that's how it works. But we are in the processes now of industry testing of a layer that you put on plastic that can be much better in terms of protecting food, protecting beer even, but it can be quite a wide application. We're working with some international food companies around that. The last one is a method for processing semi-solid metal alloys. At the moment, you cast an engine block from hot aluminium, for instance. But there's a way that you get the aluminium up to a certain temperature, and then you squeeze it like you squeeze toothpaste, but it's not a melted down material. It actually has better properties. And there's a lot of work being done at the moment with some companies in the industry and the automotive industry specifically, maybe the aerospace industry as well, in those fields. And we've got international patents on those, either US patents or European patents. And those are things that sound mundane, but they can actually change industries. And I get very excited about it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. Thanks, Dr. Speedy. Hopefully covered it. I was just going to talk around the plastics, something I'm very excited about. Thanks.
Are you excited about the beer in the festival?
I'm excited about the money that could come in from the Africa.
There is a question that was not responded to about the ratio of those who come and those who go.
Just to say, I think the question related to the slide on human capital, to say that those numbers do reflect, of course, the turnover rate, but also the recruitment, the bringing in people into the organization. When we ended the last financial year, our turnover rate overall in the organization had come down from quite high numbers. I think when we had the meeting with the members the last time, we're experiencing quite a big problem in that regard. It's come down to close to about 12% as we speak now. And we're quite proud because that's closer to the normal sort of situation of about 10% turnover for the kind of organization that we are. We have been actively recruiting, of course, at various levels. So the number of masters and doctorates that you see is a result of recruitment, but also the result of our human capital development strategies. So our own staff, we've been encouraging them to study, when they graduate, of course, they reflect in those numbers. But it's been quite, our recruitment efforts have also been incredibly successful to attract the highly qualified PhDs in particular into our, and you can see that number going up quite nicely. And we will be intensifying those efforts into the next year, particularly on recruitment of senior cadre for our staff. And we, you know, our strategy for when we present our business plan next year, we hope to elaborate on that. So it is a combination of both our human capital development that you see there, but also bringing in people into our fold.
Thanks. I think we must return to not now. This question of the national analysis of the skill space. You see, because what you are giving in terms of what you are recruiting there and so on, the skills you are attracting, is just CSIR based. We don't know what's happening in the scientific community as a whole, and how do we measure it to national objectives and what we want to achieve. I think that's an area that we might want to return to, just so that if we don't have those targets, then we must start developing those targets so that there is proper coordination.
It might also be useful to have that conversation with the NRF when the NESC interacts with you, because they will have a broader view of precisely that issue. At least at the level of masters and doctorates and so on. But that's precisely what the activity is about.
Sure. No. That point is taken. But it comes to the second matter that you've raised about coordination as well. There's one aspect that we need to look into. But I'm just highlighting this. Thanks about the cohort. I think it's an area that we might want to check and look into the operations of the cohort, how regular, what are their areas of coordination, what, you know, those type of questions that we might want to return back to you on. There are a lot of exciting stuff that is happening, that we hear is happening. And you are perfectly within your right to say what you think about the other methods of coordination and infra-core and all those. My thinking, I've told them that take this thing and give it to Centec. Finish. And obviously there are other interests at play here. Maybe you've got a different view. But I'll leave it at that. Mr. Marco, let me give to you, comrade.
For a long time. Jay, just to move from something tangible, I've got something tangible, and I want to then move my few questions. I'm not going to number them exactly, but to move from a few questions on the tangible to something more abstract. the CSIR may be aware that in a previous manifestation I made a proposal around mine health and safety. After participating in the Mining Qualifications Authority's executive preparation program, I learned that the CSIR conducted static load tests on mine support systems in particular, and that the static load tests did not simulate the seismic events that caused the type of accidents happening at Tarzona and elsewhere late last year. It led to that point calling for a mini Java on mine health and safety. Now, it leads to the same sort of question that has been asked. The clearly defined jurisdiction, what is MINTEC, what is SABS, what is CSIR domain? I understand the mandatory testing is done by CSIR. Is that testing facility, research and development, is it, whose domain is testing, you know? Is it SABS? Should it be MINTEC? I'd like to hear your opinion on that, because we don't have a mandatory test as yet to simulate a seismic event. So they do the static load test, just put that support system under pressure until it buckles or breaks. Whilst what may be required, and that's not for us here necessarily to decide, the mini Indaba and the biennial mine health and safety summit should get all the players together where they can decide that. Let's say that there's a need for a mandatory dynamic load test of a mine support system holding up that roof, preventing rock falls and rock bursts. Would it be your domain? That's my concern. And if so, what are the implications of that? Are you participating in mine health and safety deliberations at this point in time? So that's the first tangible I'd like to ask. And something more abstract. Yeah, just comment a side issue on what the chair just said and the CEO of CSR. The minister just recently for communications just recently released more policy directions, and they include more clearly defined role for CENTEC and so on. Now the innovation system and its coordination, I appreciate the comments made earlier on that. And I appreciate the comments by the chair that we will look more clearly into how the coordination takes place within that 10-year innovation plan, the National Innovation System, the role of COALT and so on. But fundamentally, the social and the economic impact of the thematic areas and the programs mentioned earlier, are they geared specifically for a time frame? We look at the time frame being focused on now as the long-term objectives, but surely there must be some medium and short-term objectives as well. And I say this because some projects have low-hanging fruit that can be picked should there be the right research and development support for enterprise development. As an example, anyone who comes up with a new idea, whether it be a new design for a wire car or whatever, has to sit in front of a panel of venture capitalists, are going to be told that, you know, this technology hasn't been developed, researched, and developed far enough for us to take it any further. And a venture capitalist is going to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to invest in this project. Do they come to you? At the CSIR, so they go to the NRF, where one assesses whether this new innovation, the concept, just the idea, is migrated from a concept, from the idea to a concept, to something that is commercialized and can have the social and economic impact or commercial impact that its originator or inventor had in mind. Now, where is that support lying mostly at the moment for inventiveness? We're not talking about enterprise development here, because it doesn't get to enterprise development phase because it's just an idea or concept. Do individuals come to you who don't have that sort of research and development support? Where else can they go to? That's the question that's on a lot of people's minds out there. There are software developers who've gone and studied business science with honors in ICT that approached me earlier in the year. They've had to sell out some of their ideas to an established company because they couldn't get the research and development support that they needed. And so the research and development work that they're doing is funded by a commercial entity that now has an equity stake in the company. So I'm asking also when it comes to intellectual property, almost as if it's in the national interest, if it's a public good, would you protect someone's intellectual property up to a point to assist them in the protection of their intellectual property? Because to go and look for investment means you've got to share the idea. And whether you sign a non-disclosure agreement or not, or a non-circumvention agreement or not, it doesn't necessarily offer you the sufficient protection. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Moore.
Thank you. Again, a number of questions which clearly speak to very, all of which speak to very important issues. Let me try and respond to them sequentially. The first one, on mining health and safety, and such things as road testing and so on, whose domain is it? Let's give a particular example here. We have a rope testing center, which is precisely about testing ropes for mining activities, which is within the CSIR. Now, it happens to be at the CSIR. Is it best placed at the CSIR? That is a conversation we ought to be having. It really is a facility that ought to be adequately funded through partnerships between the private sector and the public sector. Private sector, after all, are the beneficiaries. However, I cannot leave that kind of activity entirely to the private sector because, you know, if you really have a concern about health and safety and people's lives, then you need to be willing to support that activity in order to ensure that the level of quality and attention to health and safety is in keeping what we expect. Now, let me take one step back and look at the whole the chain of activity in the mining arena and the various players that get involved. At the very early stage, at the prospecting stage, to just find out what is there in under the ground before you even think of doing anything. The Council for Geosciences does work in that area. The Council for Geosciences reports to the Department of Minerals and Energy. Then there's the activity of actually doing the mining, which obviously is an activity that in itself is an industry activity. But CSIR then partners in activities that have to do with extracting the material from underground. So the technologies that have to do with the exercise of extraction, whether you're talking about methods to do with ventilation, to do with communication, and to do with rock blasting in as safe a way as possible. So I would partner there with industry in getting to do this. But once the ore gets above ground, and CSIR reports to science and technology, the ore gets above ground, then MINTEC gets involved in mineral processing. Again, it's a Department of Minerals and Energy activity. Then later it's going to be involved in beneficiation, to actually take the materials and use platinum to whether you're interested in fuel cells or interested in other applications, catalysis in general, or for that matter, jewelry.
then you might again involve, say, the CSIR through material science and manufacturing primarily, and ultimately through the formation of enterprises, and then the industry gets involved again at the level of the manufacturing industry now as opposed to the mining industry. So there's an interplay here in terms of high-level government ownership between minerals and energy and science and technology and the institutions that report to those. And a conversation that's sort of, and underpinning all of that, I omit this, is standards. Standards for blasting, standards for ropes, standards for whatever it is that you believe you ought to maintain standards on. And ideally, you might argue that that might be the domain, and therefore associated testing. Might be the domain of SARS. So if I were asked what is the right thing to do, I'd say that SARS should have a purview across SABS, across the whole spectrum of activity, and of course SABS report to trade and industry. So there would need to be a very strong clustering at the level of DME, DST, trade and industry to ensure that all of the entities that are involved in the chain of activities in the mining industry to do with the activity as well as the infrastructure that's associated with activity all talk one to the other. And that I think is an example that probably also speaks to the other question on how that how is this conducted. We are aware that perhaps the fact that one makes that statement does not therefore mean that this is coordinated in a manner that is satisfactory at the moment. And we would welcome, we have certainly at CSR tried to do this in our mining activities by saying we want to have a strategic advisory board that has people who come from CGS, from MINTEC, from the Department of Minerals and Energy, in addition to DST as well as our own people and just experts in the field, precisely so that we might have an input from various stakeholders on the kinds of things that we believe and the gaps that exist, the kinds of things that we believe we ought to be doing in order best to fulfill support for that industry. It's worked reasonably well, but there's still a gap at the level of there being, one having a sense of satisfaction that there really is at the high level coordination between DME, DST, DTI, as well as all of the bodies that have been mentioned, the CGS, CSIR, and SARS. And I think we need to find a way to have those conversations in a comprehensive manner. What does a person do who has got an idea, who has got an invention, and we're not talking, we're quite rightly making a distinction, a very clear distinction between seeking support to form a startup enterprise and seeking technical support to do with further developing a piece of work, now an invention. We don't frankly have a formal, per se, walk-in center for that kind of activity as CSIR. However, there are certain instruments, typically they're not necessarily advisory instruments, they tend to be funding instruments that one is able to appeal to as an external, an individual, an external party, the Innovation Fund, for example. But that takes the form of you put your ideas together in the same way that you present to a VC. You have an idea, you say this is what you want to do and this is the development you think you want to conduct and can you support me for however much I think I believe for the next 3 years in order to develop this. And then people assess that proposal and then give you funding or not, depending on whether or not they think it's a good proposal and whether or not they've got the ability to execute. However, that is not exactly advice. It is assessing whether or not you yourself have thought through and already understand what it is that you want to do. Otherwise, you are not going to be considered. If you have some idea and you are not really sure even how to articulate it in a manner that may then be sufficiently clear to even stand the chance of being supported, that there's a gap here. There's no question that there's a gap. Now, I think that when the Department of Science and Technology speaks of the formation of the TIA, the Technology Innovation Agency, It is exactly, amongst other things, that type of gap that they're seeking to address, where it will not simply be talking about the funding streams, people walking in with their already well-written, clear proposals, or for that matter, people already having a piece of IP and saying how to commercialize it. But at stages that sit before that, incubating ideas instead of incubating companies. That, I think, is something that is that still requires a conversation, and that hope, and that the ST representatives here, that the TIA, will see when it seeks to look at that gap that exists, that we always talk about. That this is one, incubating ideas is one of the things that is actually going to try and do, that have a commercial, that might have a commercial potential. And you're absolutely right again about the early stage. Amongst other things, TIA would then also want to be involved in that very early stage venture support, which is sorely missing. It's not there. It's difficult to come by. We do a little bit of that ourselves, but for our own internal activities, the IP we've been talking about here, we might then seek to set up startup companies. We might involve other parties, but it is not standard practice that would necessarily, or would not be seen as the party to come to if someone has an idea coming from outside. Regarding IP protection, certainly, if for example you come forward with an idea and it has potential, it can be protected, but you haven't got the funding, then we would not necessarily, and we have not positioned ourselves in that way, that would say, okay, we'll find the funding and then we'll share the benefit in some way. Now, technically, it that whole space of very early stage support for ideas that is missing, that requires attention, that hopefully TIA will look at. What we will do is, if, for example, you come and you say, you have an idea, let me take the particular example of indigenous plants. Someone saying this plant has the potential to be a pharmaceutical lead. Then the immediate thing would be to have an agreement between the party that's walked in and the CSIR. And if indeed that eventually leads to potential to a drug lead, then there will be a benefit-sharing arrangement. You can always, of course, argue about what percentages ought to be involved here, and the precedents of that. The precedents in some work that we've already done around, for example, the there's the Sudia, and there's the candle, Monatin, and then my colleagues can help me in this regard, where there has been... it's not just a theoretical exercise, real living benefit sharing agreement. But if it's a slightly different situation where you walk in with a product and you say, this is a prototype I've developed, can you protect it for me and we take it from there? Probably that's exactly the kind of area that falls between the cracks at the moment. Where it's not entirely clear that we would enthusiastically pick it up and say, except perhaps by exception, but for us to routinely say this is the kind of service we offer, it is certainly not the way we have positioned our commercialization activities at the moment. And secondly, I'm inferring from what you say that the instruments that exist within DTI, like Kula and Ziga and so on, tend more again to be supported business, setting up the enterprise, rather than supported invention per se. So support for ideas is something that collectively South Africa still need to think hard about. Okay, so let me leave it at that for now, and Chris, if you want to add something.
Thanks, Dr. Speci. If I may just add, the Innovation Fund does have a patent support fund. How much has been invested, I'm not sure at this stage, but that's also a potential avenue. I haven't explored it, but I'm aware of it.
No, thank you very much. Members, I'm taking this place because I just want to finish at Dr. 12, lunch at the New Wing restaurant. Dr. 12, our guest, welcome to join us. I'm going to take Prof. Mr. Nyandu and Mr. Novo. I think they will be the last month. Okay. Prof. Norman?
Thank you, Chair. I have lots of things that I won't ask them all. But can I just ask, in a rather naughty way, what was your share in the recent mining disaster? What I really mean is, you know, I don't know exactly what happened in that mining disaster, but we know that concrete has potential for deteriorating at deeper and deeper levels. And I don't think suitable concrete has ever been found. That the deeper you go, the quicker it breaks up in a way. And one can see this in the mind, you see, by sometimes trying to secure things with wire and all those sorts of things because the concrete can't stand the pressure. So I really like to know what happened. I don't understand what happened there. But also, really, what is being done about it? But I know that that is a major problem in mining. And that is basically a comment. If I've got something to say on it, Rowan, good, thank you. I want to talk about very basically, briefly, on contract work. You see, well, I'm not quite sure exactly to what extent you engage in contract work, but I once had a response from an organization in Australia, and I've mentioned this before, that securing the mine dumps in what used to be my constituency area in Dobsonville Meadowlands, that was secured with a chemical that was carcinogenic. And nobody ever wanted to admit this, but the people in Australia were adamant about it and said I should get that information. I don't know, you see, whether I believe the CSIR is involved in stabilizing that mine. But anyhow, you don't have to go into that because it's a long, it's an old story already. The problem might have been solved by now. But I was going to say there are things like that which go wrong. I mean, the point is that there were lots of people in Netherlands, Dobsonville, who got problems, best way, easiest way to put it, from that mine. I wanted to say something that I have said many a time, that maybe the CSR is growing too big. It's not, I don't think it's necessarily that the employees would feel that way. And I might be totally wrong, you see, but I just picture the situation when I was a student, probably my second, third year, and they said, oh, you must go and work for the CSIR. Not that the CSIR asked me, I was just a student. But they had two little buildings on the Wits campus. And really, we've grown to a massive size today. And one wonders, really, if the net is spread too wide, I don't know. I just want to ask you whether you think it's time that you need to split off some of these structures that you are talking about into separate. I'm not suggesting you should. I just want to know what you say about it. Some of it is just comments from my side. You don't necessarily have to answer all of them. You know, I had a big fallout with... that is during Mount Jarvis time when she was chair of the science and technology, with one of the DGs who said to me when I asked him, tell me amongst all these things that you've told us, what is basic or fundamental research? He says, everything we do is basic and fundamental. Well, I know he's talking utter rubbish, sorry to say it now, and I'll say it to his face to you, but I don't have to say it to you. So I was very pleased when I saw your diagram on slide 4. Not to pretend that everything is basically, because I believe it can't be. I'm just saying I like the diagram. You see, what I was getting at, not that I feel that the CSIR need to be split up, and maybe the people CSIR won't like me at all, but I'm just really asking what's your view if it is not perhaps becoming very big, you see, and I'm just looking time-wise what has happened to it. Just a final comment, and you don't have to answer all these things, is that I've had great difficulty. It's a very nice report. I gave up when I looked at the financial things because I had difficulty when I go from one size print to another size print that I cannot read the small size print. Now that may be, it's not just the financial, it's every time you explain some diagrams you go to small size print, and I know why, but it makes it very difficult, and maybe that is because of my particular health problem. Diabetic, and so maybe I should have a magnifying glass, but I don't want to resort to that. And I just find that it's great difficulty reading some of this. I mean, all publications do that, you see, but I find maybe the size is just a little bit too small. Anyhow, those are comments on things there, but I'm very serious about the mind situation. I don't know what happens there, but whether there is concrete which cannot withstand the pressures very deep underground, that is a problem. The concrete collapses. But I'll leave it at that there. Maybe I should say thank you very much for the color diagram. It helps me a lot. But there are also problems, you see, when you get very small color pieces. Then I cannot begin to distinguish between two colors of very just slight variation. And maybe numerals would be very helpful sometimes. But it can't be done in a very small area, I can see that. But it's just a comment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Prof.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Muhammad. Regarding the difficulty breathing down our report, perhaps we can talk to the communications people and make it available to you as an electronic document, which you can then size at will and go to whatever font size that you want for the bits that are difficult to read. That should not be a problem. Just bear that in mind. The mining disaster issue. We just having a conversation at CSR yesterday that what we ought to do is proactively to step forward and say that to the extent that there's a need to review the practices in the mining industry, not alone but with the Mine Health and Safety Council and so on, it is necessary to have some honest brokers. People are not involved directly in the mining activities, who are not involved in industry as beneficiaries directly in industry, to be honest brokers, but have got the technical know-how and say that these are the practices, this is where we believe the practices are deficient, this is where we believe, for example, are the shafts and the ropes tested sufficiently frequently at all mines and so on, including your question about are the loads, are the beams that are used, concrete beams, sufficiently strong, and what are the minimum, what are the standards that ought to be adopted. I think, and this relates also to the earlier question, I think we are at a time when we speak of such a mining, of doing a mining audit, that we ought to be asking whether we ought not be bringing on board the bodies that have got the appropriate expertise, and I believe that we can play a major role in this regard as CSR, together with Mining and Health and Safety Council, together with SABS, together with perhaps MinTech, and then this is something that we are consciously going to take up SCSR regarding what exactly caused the accident that happened. I think I'm not able to shed much more light personally on this. I was under the impression it was still being investigated, but that's probably just me not knowing. I don't know the story about the carcinogenic strengthening materials in the mine in the Dobsonville area. I do not recall a discussion about this in the past. We can try and find out as best we can about this, but I'm not able to comment usefully on that matter at this stage. Is the CSR too big? That's an important question. Time was when the Medical Research Council was spawned from the CSIR. The National Research Foundation was spawned from the CSIR. It is certainly the mandate of the CSIR says that was stimulating industrial activity. This might mean scientific and industrial activity. This might mean spawning whole new, not just startup companies and so on, but whole new areas of industrial activity. There might be the biotechnology arena, for example, is not yet populated with the whole industry. Might we succeed in spawning a whole new industry in that area? Certainly. That's something that we intend. Are the areas that are ripe to be spawned to really go out and function as entities that sit outside the CSIR? These are things we have to keep asking ourselves all the time. As the 10-year plan begins to inform some of our strategic thinking, we start asking questions about what are the new things we can start doing and what are the things that we might either stop or take out in some way. Sometimes this happens anyway because there's a strategic position that's taken that this is what should happen, such as the NML, National Metrology Lab, being spun out of CSIR, as has happened recently. So it's a question of really just watching this space closely, and I think my colleagues may want to comment further.
Probably at the level of certain activities we're involved in. I think Dr. Bisi has addressed that, but I certainly think in terms of the number of people that you have in the CSIR, we could deal with critical masses in some of the areas. And so from that perspective, I think the CSIR only a couple of years ago was about a 5,000 strong organization. I think this just about the time the NRF was born. We're now about down to, in fact, recently we're about 2,500, we're down close on 2,000 people. And we are worried about, in some of these areas, we operate in many areas, we don't have sufficient critical masses in those areas. And for us to be strong in some of those areas, we do need those numbers. So I think it's, in terms of activities, maybe there is a question of being big. But in terms of the actual numbers of people in our organization, I think we need to look at that closely.
But what is the direct answer? Are you growing too big?
I think we are operating in many areas, and I think that when we engage with stakeholders such as yourself, with the temptation to broaden and the organizational reach in terms of activities, it's always there because there's always something that's not addressed, and I think we need to guard against that, you know, to spread ourselves a bit too thin. But as I said, in numbers terms, I don't think we're too big.
Prof, I think if the basic research and fundamental research question is, you covered on that, we don't have to go back to it. Babunyan.
Yeah, well, my question is actually directed at the direct research. I was wondering if there is any directed research that targets cash in transit heights and whether we are winning the war in that regard, and also other forms of credit card fraud, you know, that we see emerging at this time. If the CSIR can, you know, give us some highlights on that. And I guess the second one is, I think it's based on the slide that we have there, number 16. And on slide number 24, sorry that I have to go back, but I think it always assists us when we, especially because this government is keeping an eye on capital, on human capital development, especially of the previously marginalized groups. And we want to see if the previously marginalized groups are coming to the party, given the fact that we have myriads of challenges with regard to our public education system. And of course, there are also challenges that are unique to those learners whose mother tongue is not the same as the medium of instruction. So it becomes, therefore, very important to have a nice breakdown when it comes, for instance, to issues of human capital development. To have a nice breakdown of, how many Indians, how many colors, how many whites are coming through. Not for racist reasons, but I think it assists us as government to be able to monitor, a transformation and also the performance of our public education system, which we could have that kind of a breakdown. It would help us to assist us a great deal. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleague is going to take the presentation time to time. I seem to recall, I'm not sure if the honourable member is new to the committee or not, but when we presented our business plan in the CSR, actually we had quite an extensive presentation that, in fact, we're quite proud of an innovation we have, which is a cash in transit vehicle that has been developed with special capabilities within the CSR. And we're proud to say that that particular vehicle is actually in the market. Not only being commercialized, it's in the market, it's being used, and it's actually quite an effective innovation. The uptake was one of the questions of the issues we discussed at that time in terms of the uptake by the security companies, and I think we're seeing a better response than I think at the time around that. In respect to the work around credit card fraud and activity and such areas, one of the areas we're starting in the CSR, and perhaps my colleague can come in here, is an area around information security, and we think that it would part of the application, of course, would be in the area around the area around credit card fraud and other aspects like that. So we haven't, I think we're in early stages of that work. Maybe in the future meetings we can report in detail around how that is developing. Maybe my colleagues can add on that. In terms of transformation, we're quite happy to provide you with the detail, with a breakdown. I think what we've tried to do at this in our annual report is to report in sort of global terms in terms of black and white, and I hope that at least gives you an idea of how we're progressing in terms of transformation. We are extremely encouraged by the progress we're making. We've been putting particular emphasis on bringing in black and women researchers in particular into our science, engineering, and technology base, and I think as our report indicates, we've made good progress in relation to the last year on that front, and this is an area that continues to receive attention from us. So, but we're happy to provide you with the information that's broken down to the level you indicated.
Chair, I'm so glad Dr. Sunisi came back on the issue of credit card fraud, because the question was, what are we doing about credit card fraud? But the bigger answer is that we have started a process with some targeted grants from the DST on information security. And the reason why I'm glad that the meeting came back, you know so much more about the field than I do. So I think it's a good time to maybe just to ask him to comment a bit on that.
True that you know more about credit card fraud.
Yes, the sinister ways of interpreting that. Certainly, the whole area of cyber security and cyber crime, which is where this would fall, it's something that we've had an interest in
and who continue to have a growing interest in. Because that's about this. It's an era that has about to do very generally with the security of information, electronic digital information that may sit you may try and make a payment online, or you may simply be doing so directly at some point of presence where you need to purchase something. The issue that is much harder to deal with is that of identity theft, and a lot of credit card fraud works that way. It's not necessarily someone intercepting online your credit card details and then finding ways to break the encryption codes, and then therefore there's a lot of that as well, of course, or attempts to do that, but it's actually not as easy as all that. The notion that people can even track your keystrokes as you type in, they can try and do that, but it usually in the full cycle of activities that eventually lead to money being siphoned from your bank, you have unwittingly given information to someone, or they've taken it from you without you being aware. There's some form of theft of information there. And then the matter of identity theft, such as someone actually physically forging your signature, that's an example of identity theft. Those are harder things, but they involve all sorts of behavioral issues. How careful are you with your PIN numbers? How careful are you with your cards and so on? So our focus has been much more on that element of the technical element of that activity that is referred to as cybercrime, where you can begin to monitor patterns of behavior of people who have criminal intent. People are involved in money laundering, for example. One of the patterns that you look for is holding an individual who holds very many accounts. It does not mean that individual is crooked, but it's already the kind of thing you want to flag and look at. And when I say many, I mean someone who has 30, 40, 50 accounts. And I hope none of us in the room here. But that begins to be suspicious behavior. You then begin to monitor that, and you couple that with things like that person conducts transactions in very many different parts of the world, the Bahamas one day and Hong Kong the next and so on. They're either a very active businessman with lots of accounts or they're up to no good. And you can begin to gather data on patterns of behavior of that nature. In the same way that you might gather data using special information that we're showing earlier on patterns of crime and begin to have a sense of, do crimes in certain parts tend to happen at lunchtime when people, or at the end of the month when you think that people have just gone out and taken some money or just been paid, or do they tend to happen in the morning and so on. So you can similarly do the same thing in cyberspace, as it were. Look at how of the behavior and clustering of information and the types of information, and therefore begin to home in on certain on people who might be involved in nefarious activity. It's an exciting area, and we continue to work in that area. But obviously, the criminals are also doing their own work and wanting to stay ahead of the pack. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
It's a basic research. I think that's what is fundamental. All right. Thank you very much. Let me take the last.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Page 92 of your report is stating that there are surpluses, 2006 surplus, 2007 surplus. Is the surplus from the parliamentary grant or otherwise? That's one question. And we've just passed the SKA bill, in which we're told the SIR had a lot to say. What is it that the SIR had a lot to say on the bill that we're going to pass? You are having the graduates that are coming up. What incentives are being given so that more and more graduates are being attracted, particularly those from the disadvantaged or inverted commas vulnerable groups? MDGs 2014, from your point of view, GIFSA and GISA is CSIR ready to say, we think from our point of view and from our work, we are able to meet some of the MDGs or meet them all by 2014. And also, we are able to say from the work that we are doing, we are ready to be involved in addressing the issues of the second economy. The other thing, we've just been celebrating the launch of the International Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology, CSIR. What role is it going to be playing there, or is that for the internationals and nothing for CSIR? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, comrade. Chief.
Some good questions again. The surpluses, I'll invite Chris to comment on that, but in a nutshell, it's not surpluses from parliamentary grants, it's actual margin from our contract, external contract activities. You may want to add to that, I don't know, Chris. So it's an important, I'm glad you raised that point, because it's important to make that clarification. I will allow my colleagues to respond to the questions on GIFSA and SGIFSA and graduates. The SKA, ultimately the square kilometer array is, yes, it's about astronomy. It's about the intention is to do red astronomy. But what it is, it's actually a big device for gathering and processing data. It's electronics and computer. It's a big computer in many respects. And therefore, what we've been doing as CSIR is to bring to bear that expertise that we have with regard to things like design of antenna for gathering the data, with regard to communications, broadband infrastructure, because when it's fully functional, SKA is going to require the transfer of a terabit of data per day or something like that. Phenomenal amount of data that we gathered, and that will be needed to be distributed to various places for analysis. So that's the sense in which we've been involved in providing the technical input on the actual infrastructure that SKA is going to be, and relating that to the scientific broadband and supercomputing, the high-performance computing center that you referred to earlier, activities of the country, because after all, to process the data require vast computing power. Well, assuming, in fact, that as we build SKA, that because if we built it now, we wouldn't be able to afford it, but assuming that the prices will keep going down, that by the time we need to build, to go beyond the meerkat, the demonstrator, to build the full thing, that the prices of components will have dropped dramatically, and that we'll be able to build it at a reasonable cost. ICGEP, I do you actually know, do you have the answer on that one?
No.
Yeah, okay. Probably, yeah. So, I'm not sure that, I think what we ought to do, to be entirely fair, is to give you a full answer offline, because we might mislead you here. I'm not aware, neither one of us are aware of our having been very consciously at the center of this activity as CSIR. I got the impression that other parties, such as some investors, are very closely involved with this, but we'll need to follow up on that one. Chief Lasky.
Thank you, sir. Let me take the question around attracting young graduates into our environment. We were quite excited last year. I think we talk about it in our annual report. We launched our human capital development strategy, which is a comprehensive strategy outlining a range of programs that we are implementing already this year to attract young people, in particular in our environment. A range of those, of course, include internship programs, and that relates, through the internship programs, of course, we want to be able to offer work opportunities to recently graduated individuals from tertiary institutions. Most of what typically happens with most of those individuals, either we absorb them into an environment as full-time employees, or we actually absorb them to pursue further studies under another program which we call studentship program. The studentship program is where we actually bring in, or rather, we bring in full-time students who are studying full-time for masters and PhDs into the CSR environment. They work on CSR projects. And one of the exciting things about a program like that is that, of course, not only do you, when you complete your studies, do you get the degree, but you've actually been exposed to a work environment, so to speak, and therefore your ability to be absorbed in the work environment, the chances increases greatly. So we've got that program. We intend to scale up the numbers in the next year. Already we've got close to 100 people who are participating in that program at this point in time. So those are some of the opportunities we're creating in our environment. We of course continue to offer scholarships and bursaries at university level, CSR scholarships and bursaries. And again, those individuals who have CSR bursaries, we offer them an opportunity to work in an environment, or rather to have a first right of refusal should they graduate. So we think that with that particular strategy, there is a great chance of in particular bringing a great number of previously disadvantaged students and young professionals in our environment. And indeed, the majority of the people who are coming into those programs are actually black and women. And so we are excited about that. So again, as we report in further. Perhaps maybe when you report again, you will indeed be exposed to details around that. What is the CSRs? How are we responding to the MCGs and GIPSA and ASISA? In general, I think that most of our strategies and our research programs. You try to reflect and respond to overall national strategies, including targets that South Africa has set for itself in terms of the MDGs. So we can't say this is a specific thing we're doing other than to say that our work with you, for example, in terms of water and sanitation, earlier on I mentioned that we've got a unit on rural infrastructure and services, and they do a great deal of projects, for example, on water and sanitation. Again, the overall overarching strategic goal there is to contribute to meeting the Millennium Development Goals, as you mentioned. We've aligned, in terms of GIPSA, we've aligned our human capital development strategy to actually be in one breath a response to the needs of GIPSA. So, for example, our internship program is a direct response to the GIPSA needs, and we try to encourage that we attract interns into the GIPSA, we have qualifications in the area, in the priority areas identified in terms of GIPSA. Similarly, with ASISA, again, there's a range of initiatives in the organization that align themselves to the sectors of ASISA. For example, the biofuels, and again, if you read in our annual report, there's a project that we're implementing on behalf of the DSP on beneficiation of waste streams out of biofuels. That is our one contribution. If you look at our role in implementing the advanced manufacturing strategy, again, that relates to the new industrial strategy, which in turn relates to ASISA. So I should say that overarchingly, these particular strategies and objectives of the country, they inform the kind of research programs we decide, we implement and in effect our overall strategies in the organization.
Chair, I think that's a really good answer. I would like to just on the last point add maybe one or two real life examples and it's to do with the focus. But for instance, on the metals, on the light metals, we're working on aluminium and semi-solid metal forming. We spoke about that. We're also working on the light metals, with Mintec on magnesium, but then specifically also on titanium with Boeing, which is perhaps an application in the aerospace industry. In the fibers and textiles, we're specifically driving a natural fibers initiative that goes right from growing the fiber to processing and the industry. And there, on the one hand, Dr. Sabisi already told you about the work with the aerospace industry with Airbus, but we're also doing new work with the construction industry that using natural fibers in panels for the construction industry that might even change the way we put together some housing and some buildings. We're doing similar work in the paper and pulp industry. And then we also doing some very early work, but with a hard aim to make it a real ASISA issue in the longer term with the Department of Science and Technology on, for instance, the hydrogen economy of the future. And we started with them on a hydrogen center of competence. We will start looking at some materials and usages of that so that we can be a player in the hydrogen economy industry of the future.
You're doing very well, except that we're getting into repetition of what we said earlier. I want you to continue.
Share the good news, though. I'm done.
No, thanks. Mama Dr. Misile would know about the Bora Napan for some information on your last question of the launch. I'm going to request the Wooden Law, they must do it in writing so that they share it with the committee. And that goes also to the electronic version of your presentation. You can just send it to her so that anybody who might want to go to it can access it as well. The committee section. The one that you promised from. Okay? I think we're doing well. I think you must also forgive us here. I think we did our best to engage with this report. But frankly, most of the members returned yesterday. And some did not have the presentation before we left. I mean, the report at hand. So my view is that we will have to return to some of the issues with you. Either by way of coming to the CSR to actually look at the facilities and some of the programs that you have as well in Pretoria or whatever. So it's a matter that I'm just highlighting here. You're raising a very important, and when you started, Chief, you raised a whole range of matters that impact on particularly the second economy and how you deal with them. We want to get some in-depth discussion. For instance, if you raise issues of climate change, just an example, or desertification, what are the programs that are in place? Have we made an impact anywhere else? You see, is it happening? Is it still at research stage? And if you say that your core business is not implementing projects, is it a limitation or is it something that you're comfortable with? Those are some of the issues that I would want to engage. Prof said that in his time, you know, the CSR was a small institution. Now it's gone big, and I was just trying to check whether he was saying, well, is it too big, is it too small? But to me, the issue is focus. The size, yes, but the focus becomes very important. 1945, I'm told, that's when you established. And the law, 88 and 90. That was the last time we looked at, we reviewed the legislation in terms of amendment. I'm not saying, sure, we don't amend laws for the sake of it. But if, for instance, the scope is limiting, it's not addressing the challenges of a new dispensation, then we have to go back. You see, for instance, let's say what in your mandate is to look into industrial research as well. What has been your input on the current national industrial strategy framework? DTI, has there been a discussion? Is it, you know, I've looked into what the draft, you see, and I don't want to say anything further than that. But are you saying, well, this is a direct question really, has there been any consultation input in terms of that strategy? The question of poverty reduction, I was just looking on to slide 19, for instance, if you could just go back there quickly, not even slide 19 where you look into your project, direct, those that are having a direct impact. Social progress. Or project. If you check, for instance, food production, if we look into the numbers, it says to me that your priority here has been digital doorway size. I don't know whether my interpretation is correct, which is fine, but it tells you where you prioritize. The first economy. You see? So I would want us to really look into focus areas that really come with intervention into the so-called second economy. The call center project and things like those, which is a job creation project. But obviously it's located within enterprise creation. But in broad terms, if you look into the issues that you raised earlier, I think we still have to look broadly into that. Mr. Morkel earlier raised a very important issue about mine safety. To the extent that, you know, the question of rock fall, rock burst, and issues like those, do we have technology that look into that? Basically, convincingly earlier you said yes. But he says that there is no proper enforcement. It's not compulsory. Issues like those are real serious disasters for the nation that we need to focus, prioritize, and coordinate properly with the affected institutions as well. Let me take another example, road safety. Every year we're losing a lot of lives. What is the country doing about it except just, you know, let me not even go say what you want. Why is it not happening in other advanced jurisdictions? What technologies are they using? Is it a matter of attitude of drivers, you know, those type of things? The taxi industry, transport taxi industry, taxi recap, you know, have we been involved? If not, why not? The other matter that I'm concerned about is early support for science students, primary, secondary, high school level. You know, this is a matter that I'm going to recommend highly to the portfolio committee to discuss with the portfolio committee on education so that we do proper oversight. The laboratories that I've checked are not the same laboratories that some of them, not most of them, the one that I've visited, are in the same kind of standard as they were many years ago when some of us were still at school. I think we need an improvement there. If we want to develop scientists so that cherry picking doesn't become the order of the day, I'm not suggesting that you do that. But obviously you catch that at master's level, at doctoral level. What do we do? I'm not saying it's your responsibility. But what is the education department and the scientific community doing to ensure that we have a systematic way of monitoring and developing future scientists? At some point we had a discussion with the Council for Geoscience some time ago. And the question of natural attrition, people who are retiring, and new entrants was a real issue. Geophysicists was a problem in terms of what we have in the country and the retiring scientific community. I'm not sure whether that situation has improved. But that's a matter of skills development and things like that. So, to me, I think we need to be much more focused and lift the bar, but you see, granted, all over, we're doing all these things, but we can't be spread definitely forever. We've got to be able to say, in the next, I think I had a discussion, just to give an example, of housing, with
was some of the team here, to say when we took over in 1994, we made a public policy statement in the name of the president about 1 million houses in 5 years. Done. We've now done 2.3, 2.4 million. But the standard of those houses, the quality of the houses, the things like those, we're still talking the same thing. Mr. Marie was saying that we're having an intervention, there are things, but yes, let's see some progress. If it means let's have a pilot project that is championed by the CSIR, why don't we do that? So that we say, this is what the country, in terms of environmental analysis and everything else, this is the house. In terms of the subsidies that you're giving, that might be habitable. Now, Abu Vezinyao, small, where people are really, anyway, I'm talking too much on that one. But what we did as a country was to say, let's do a review, 10-year review, which is basically reacting, retrospective type of analysis of what we're doing. The leadership in this institution must be able to assist us to look into the future as well. Should have allowed us, Chief, to make those mistakes in the past 10 years, but to say up to here, no further. Now, this is the way to go. So that at least it becomes our responsibility to say no. You see, not to say we did not get guidance. Anyway. When I look into, I think you've got a program here about spatial mapping, special economy and town. You know, I'm just thinking about town planning here. South Africa is still doing very badly in terms of town planning. We are still developing in the old patterns, townships becoming much bigger, you know, that type of thing. Anyway, I'm not putting this blame, and all I'm saying is that this integration has not yet happened. It happens at a certain level. Some members of parliament here, they live into these inner city dwellings, and some can afford, Mr. Mokal can afford to stay in Constantia. You see, but Kailisha is still the old shanties, and you know, there is no sense of town planning that tells us that we are a new country. I don't know what this program is doing, your mapping South Africa's special economy and things. What is it doing about that and development of the economy? So, thanks. And I'm trying to say we appreciate your good work. But I think we can do more. I think we can do more. The questions of coordination, the questions of focus, proper focus that leads the country, and so on and so on. I think we can do more.
Of the actual development of the international strategy. Is that correct? That's what you've been. Dr. Murray here used to run the operating unit for material science and manufacturing. So he would have been, which is the closest in his activities to the DTI. And there are things we have been involved in. Something, for example, called the AMTS, Advanced Materials Technology Strategy. Now, that's something specific where we have been very strong in, but the general industrial strategy has been very much DTI-based. We tend to then respond to the strategies rather than be party to crafting them.
What is the problem? Is it jurisdiction, or is it your own limitation, or is it questions of coordination? I mean,
it's ownership, really. To put it simply, I'm not aware that we were called upon actively to be involved in. I do not know how much consultation was conducted.
No, that's enough. I think
obviously, we're going also to blame you for the weaknesses in that strategy. If you're involved, so you are on safe ground. But it gives us an entry to say this is a draft, this is something that has been adopted, this is something that we need to go for. But how can we improve on that strategy? Members, I think we've done enough for today. We shall visit the CSIR. We just have to look into the correct timing, whether this year or early next year, but as soon as possible. And then I will have to start looking into that, even if it means it's during, before we arrive, just for a day, just to go there. But we'll give you advance notice so as to just say these are the priority areas that we want to look into. So that will be our focus. Any closing remarks before we go for lunch?
Just thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity to interact, and we look forward to that visit. And and we shall reflect considerably on the sentiment about CSR being too big and so on, and then the question about programs. Because what it really is pointing to, we believe, is people saying, where are the few really big things? We made reference to focus. And I think
thank you very much. The lunch is at the new wing.